Fan Morning Show. Sports FM, not a fan. Jenny Buggus, Ailish Porfar, Blake Murphy. Big sports weekend. Raptors playoffs. Getting going. It's happening. It's here. Feel a little confident, gotta say. Gotta say that I'm a little overconfident about the Raptors. And it dawned on me that, like, this was a weird early morning thought I kind of want to rip off you guys just before we get into the Blue Jays, because I want to delay talking about that Blue Jays game. I watched, 8 hours of Blue Jays coverage yesterday for no runs and for Matt Chapman to run 35 feet before realizing that the ball was in somebody else's glove. So give me a second on the Raptors, please. I thought maybe the fan base would change after they won the championship, right? I talk about this with Blake sometimes. And I go,
wrong.
Right? Right, yeah, wrong. But then this morning I thought, didn't the fan base change? Because it feels more confident now, like that they would go into a series against the Sixers and just find a way to win. But then it dawned on me that that was like kind of always the Raptors thing for a little while. Like there was always a high level of confidence. Whenever we used to project those other series, like the Pacers, it was always, well, the Raptors can win the series in four games. This should be a knock them down, knock them out. This is going to be a quick one, no sweat. And it usually wasn't that way. They would get wins in some cases. Early Milwaukee was another example of this, where people thought that they were going to kill Milwaukee, and then they needed Savior Norm Powell to come through and make good for them. But I wonder if, Blake, you think that this is an actual part of the fan base, like the overconfidence of the fan base that's bleeding in here a little bit, or is this something that maybe I'm just a dumb early morning thought?
I don't think it's overconfidence. I do think the fan base has shifted a little bit. And there's a lot at play here, right? Because we're post-championship. We're in a year where they've already delivered, like they've already over-delivered on what expectations were. So you get a little bit of the element of house money. But you also very clearly see that Raptors fans' anxiety still exists, where I saw multiple tweets from prominent Raptors Twitter people in the last 24, 36 hours of, ooh, I'm getting uncomfortable at how many national voices are picking the Raptors to win. Like
that's everybody, though. That's every fan base. I hate when that happens with my teams. I hate it.
Same with the Blue Jays. We're all like, whoa, it's the two. It's too good to be a Blue Jays fan. I'm a little nervous now.
Stupid Mad Dog. He had to come on here and be like, you guys, everybody likes you, and that means I don't like you. I was like, I get it. I get it, buddy. I get it.
But we have KOC and Zach Lowe on yesterday, and they're both picking Scotty Barnes for Rookie of the Year and Fred for All Defense and Pascal for All-NBA Third Team. And they're both saying, hey, there's a lot of ways this could go. And I'm doing rights to Ricky Sanchez with the 76ers guys, and they're like, ooh, you actually are more confident in the Sixers than we are. There's just – it's a high-anxiety time, and we're going to talk to Will Liu about this specifically at 8 o'clock today. The 5 days off between games that is caused by the play-in tournament – is making all it's amplifying all of this. Like, I think we've, JD, whether the answer to your question is yes or no, or yes and no, we've all gone through every iteration of it because we had to sit with it for 5 days.
Can I just tell you guys that in practice this year, I'm not as stoked on the play-in games. Like, it's good in principle, but the idea that we had these teams that were all these games under 500, I actually like that the Atlanta Hawks are in it. They sort of look like they're a little buzzy and frisky at the right time. So you get the odd team. Same with Brooklyn obviously being in it, but Brooklyn would have gotten into the playoffs, right, without a play-in game. I found myself watching these games, and there's two massive blowouts essentially. And I know Cleveland came back and made it look okay on the scoreboard, but big blowouts. And then some games tonight where I look at it and go, do I really need Hawks, Cavs tonight before getting actual just NBA playoffs started? Do I really need, like, I don't even remember what the, oh, it's Pelicans
and Clippers.
Like, I don't really need this. Like, I don't know. I know it's done well for tanking or better for tanking, but the flat bottom feels like it's done just as well. I'm not as crazy about it as I was earlier in the year, where I was kind of stoking it up and being like, oh, they can never get rid of it. They can never change it. I know it's here to stay, so maybe I shouldn't
even
complain.
There's just more exciting matchups that we've been sitting all week waiting for, and that's the thing that's changed. There's not a team that you're super excited to rally behind in these playing games where you're like, oh, I really need to see them overcome their season, and they're on this hot streak. Nobody believes in them. It's kind of just like, I'm not really that interested. Like, they're kind of boring, to be honest, because we have all these incredible matchups that we're excited for, and I would rather those have started this week. And that's a little bit different. I feel like each year we're going to have a little bit of a different play-in type narrative. But, yeah, certainly this year it's been less intriguing for me.
there are some things I don't know how you manage around. So I think the, you know, Pelicans-Clippers tonight feels a lot different if the Lakers had snuck in the play-in, right? And it's a Lakers game. And that's obviously not the case. And then in the East,
the Lakers,
I don't know,
would have snuck in, like, what, 20 games under 500? I just kind of look at that and go, what's the bar
well,
for this?
This,
like,
is the other thing I was going to say is my idea has always been I like the play-in, but you should have to be within X number of games. Like, yeah. If you're the 8 seed and you're the Clippers, you finish 6 games better than the Pelicans, and you have right. to defend your playoff spot in a one-off. Yeah. I actually think in the East it's the best year for it because those four teams are separated by one game and they all at least won 43 games. Like yeah. every one of those.
Yeah, East I know had less problem.
Charlotte's not a sexy team and Cleveland fell off without Jared Allen, but on merit, all of those teams could make the case of, hey, look, one lucky bounce and we're in the playoffs. In the West, it's less that, like, especially the Timberwolves, who were like there was a scenario where the Timberwolves were playing a one-game play-in against a team they were 12 games better than.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
But you can't put a cutoff like that because a big part of the play-in tournament is the TV money.
Yeah.
And you can't tell the TV stations, well, you might only get a couple games versus getting six.
Some TV stations, all right? Heritage Media. You're not calling the shots anymore. I like your point too, Ailish, that there's other stuff waiting that's made it feel a little different. Mm-hmm. I think there is the unfairness element at play, Blake, that you said. And there's also the fact that I lost money gambling on them as well. So Do I really need this extra losses in my life with Spurs not covering and having DeJounte Murray miss a billion shots and Keldon Johnson? I'm like, is Keldon Johnson 6 feet tall? I'm like, how short is Keldon Johnson? Score a basket, Keldon Johnson. Find a way. Anyways, I'm excited about the Raptors. I really do think that they have a shot. I think that there is a classic overconfidence. There's a classic, and I mean that in from an any fan base standpoint. And I think that there is a little bit of the fear of the consensus narrative starting to come your way, where all of a sudden good things start to happen, and you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm a little uncomfortable with all these good things that might be happening. But either way, I'm very excited to set up with our guest today, just like we did yesterday. And I thought it was great analysis, and it was really fun getting to talk to Zach Lowe and Kevin O'Connor yesterday. So, less fun. The Toronto Blue Jays. Boy, that was a slog. The Leafs game was, I guess, if entertaining to you if you like them winning games with a lot of goals. It wasn't
that
exactly
would have been the ideal game to be at in person.
Yeah, that would
I
have been
I can't imagine how much fun that was.
That would have really been good in person. Get to hear the song. Although, by the end of it, you go, I don't want to hear
you're
all
like,
that
all right. Boom, 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 what,
yeah.
boom, boom.
Once you score more than 5 goals, secondary goal's gone. I got to tell you, too, we can't bring that goal song back next year. Please. For
no,
the love
they
of
will
God.
Never change it. This
please.
Just, you're stuck with it, JD. Sorry.
It's such a bad goal song. It's the worst goal song. I cannot believe it. It was kind of fun when they started it, and I went, oh, this is fun. But they did it too long. Do you guys remember when the Blue Jays had the feeling song, Hooked on a Feeling? They had Hooked on
Not
a Feeling.
Like,
and
sing it.
Like trying to recapture the Sweet Caroline or trying to capture Caroline of Boston.
Yeah, they did Hooked on a Feeling, and it kind of worked for a little while, but then they brought it back and they tried to like double down on it for another, and it's like, no, it only works in the one moment, and that was kind of the same thing with the Hall & Oates thing where they dragged it out and they ruined it and whatever. But the game was at a hand, and we're waiting for the Jays to start, and I'm going, start the Jays. And then you see the lineup, and I went, you know what? Delay this game until Teoscar Hernandez can come back. I continue to be a little baffled at how quickly a pair of injuries can make the lineup look like that, where the bottom of it is just Zimmer. I'm watching this guy, and he's hopeless at the plate. Like, that guy's never going to get a hit in his entire life. Tapia's luck, I'm telling you, there's no chance that guy ever gets. If he ever runs into one, it's a complete fluke. If he has one hit, it's going to be the most shocking day of all of our lives. Like, it's going to be in cover of every newspaper around town. It's going to be unbelievable. Tapia, same thing. Can't believe he got on base. Like, how did this happen, Blake? I still am just staring at it. This is our lives for the foreseeable future.
It's not even just how bad it was on paper, right? Like, that 5-9 in the order looked bad, especially when Lourdes Gurriel isn't hitting great yet in the four spot, and Alejandro
Kirk had a good night.
Kirk had two hits and a couple really good plate appearances. But you look, and it's like, okay, well, they left five guys on base over the first two innings. And if you're this lineup, you've got to execute in those spots because you're not going to get you don't think you're going to get many men on base to cash in. And then in the ninth inning, you strand three in the final minute there. But they went, you know, as a team, they go, I think, 0-9 with runners in scoring position. I don't know. Like, obviously, guys who are less good are going to be less good situationally. But there were, for a poor lineup last night, I also thought there were a lot of missed opportunities where Jays actually did cobble together at least opportunities. And yeah, 0-9 with runners in scoring position, 11 guys left on base. You can't do that even with your big lineup and against a bad team.
Nope.
You certainly can't do it against a good team when, you know, hey, if you miss on this opportunity, it's the Zimmers of the world who are you're asking them to come through.
Big Z, thanks for coming out. There were a couple positives that I am going to hit on from that game, but I think the greater point there is just simply the big bats didn't have a good night, right? Vlad, not a good night. Springer, tough night. Bo,
Vlad, arguably the worst night of his career.
What a letdown from the night before.
That's the first time. It's the first time a pitcher's ever struck Vlad out three times in a row, like the same pitcher.
So too much headline love for Vladdy in the Bronx. So he ends up, maybe went to his head a little bit.
Yesterday with the reverse psychology. That's what they did.
Yeah, they did that to him. Oh, they reverse psychology'd Vlad. Damn. That's tough. Okay, well, you live, you learn. But it's just when those guys don't have a night, you feel helpless. Right? That part of the order comes up, and Vladdy has his second strikeout, his third strikeout of the game, and then the rest of the way, you're just going, oh, man. You're doing this is what sucks right now with that lineup. I was doing the just get on base so you get closer to those guys again, right? That move, where you go, just try to turn the order over a little bit. Let's try to get an extra. And it actually did play out that way because the end of the game should have been the big bats coming through for them. That was the play. They don't come through, and so you lose.
And I don't want to harp too much on the batting order because we've talked about it a bunch. And wherever Vlad's comfortable, wherever Bo's comfortable, whatever. We spoke with Dan Shulman about it yesterday, though. Maybe you do need to tweak the batting order because now it's a three-man order at the top and you need some protection.
I think they do.
I know that Bo double play last night is more on Chapman than on Bo, certainly. He stings one in the infield that maybe could have got through and Chapman gets doubled up. But Bo had a really rough night last night with guys on base. He had seven left on base. Vlad, those four strikeouts, there's only one man on base across Vlad's four plate appearances. So all these opportunities didn't roll around to Vlad. And I know Bo's never going to be the most selective of guys, but I thought last night it stood out in particular. And then you want to talk the difference between second and third in the batting order. Well, Bo already has four more plate appearances than Vlad this year. And that's three times now that I can remember where a game or a big inning ended with Vlad standing on the on-deck circle.
That's a really strong point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's tough because, like, the value of batting order over the course of the season isn't that large versus, like Bo and Vlad flipping isn't going to be that huge a difference statistically, and it's neutralized. If Vlad tells you, no, I like hitting third, I like hitting behind Bo, that, to me, because he's Vlad, outweighs the small statistical edge, but it's hard not to notice when it's been a couple times now that Vlad's standing there with a bat in his hands as the game ends or the rally ends.
You know what? It's harder. Maybe it is a Vladdy thing, and maybe this is a little bit unfair, but to me, if I have to go off of past evidence, I would think it's actually more of a Bo thing. If you recall, he really didn't want to move off short, and that turned out to be great, right? So, hey, we all take an L there. Those of us that thought, hey, maybe this guy's never going to be a shortstop, maybe he's never just going to figure out the position, he's now, I would say, a way above average rangy shortstop who is becoming one of the better ones in baseball. But he was hard in his conviction not to move off his spot. And I would think that it would be a bit of a difficult conversation maybe for him to say, like, hey, we're taking you out of your role given his history.
That's certainly possible. And you can dig into the numbers and, you know, hey, this guy, his splits at this part of the batting order, whatever. You can make the case like that, but a lot of it's going to come down to a guy's comfort zone, right? And I think when this team's healthy, if I were drawing up the batting order, it actually has Bo fourth and Teo third and Vlad second. But Bo spent the bulk of his career hitting second, and There's a statistical case that he hits better when leading off or when hitting fourth. But yeah, it comes down to comfort level. If that's how these guys like it and like it to roll through, then, you know, there is something to be said for that. It just, you know, it's been very noticeable over just seven games so far.
In better news, they get a really nice start from Gausman, and you really see what the Blue Jays signed up for there. Mm-hmm. And what else I liked about that game is that they're getting into it with Severino, and this Blue Jays team is likable, which is great. And I think that people around baseball are going to like them. I'm not expecting them to be the 2015 Blue Jays where they're mixing it up with teams all the time. But it made me feel a little good that they were in a game against the Yankees. I mentioned this with Team Canada where they got into it with Mexico, right? When the other team will talk a little trash and doesn't think you're cute anymore, that's a sign of respect. And I think that having all the Blue Jays together up on the dugout, leaning over the rail, yelling at Severino, him jawing back, those are just good things for your team bonding. Baseball, I don't know what the value of that is sometimes because, again, it's an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. But either way, I would say that out of a game that had a lot of ugliness, that was actually the two positives to me. Gausman absolutely dealt, looked great, felt sick for him. It was a Roy Halladay a type of game where it was just like, oh, so this guy's just going to cruise throughout and he's going to strike everybody out. And what are you bums going to do? Nothing? Zero?
That's what the Jays needed. They needed their guys at the bottom of the order to play like the Yankees bottom of the order. But yeah. Gausman had a great showing. I think that now we have a good showing by Manoah, Barrios, Gausman, and you should start feeling like our conversations after the first run through the lineup might be, you know, something that we can put on the back burner and feel more confident about with these guys. And no pressure to Ryu, who's getting the extra rest so he can be pushed to Saturday. And we're gonna see how that one works out. But it looks like there's been a big improvement in terms of confidence level in the starting rotation.
And a huge job by Tim Mesa to come in and get Gausman out of that jam with a double play ball, because Gausman, like, had the bullpen, whether it was Mesa or the next arm up or whatever, allowed a couple extra runs there, it would have felt very unfair for Gausman to be hung with three or four earned runs the way he pitched. Nine strikeouts, 13 swing and misses on his splitter alone. He was dealing. And
don't say that stat out loud so teams start reading up on, like, that's
they're listening.
That's really good.
Look, if the Oakland A's are here in Toronto and they're up this early as they adjust from West Coast time and they're listening to this show, they don't even face Gausman in this series, but I'll just tell you.
I actually want them to do it because it's
Kevin Gausman, headline news, Oakland A's. Kevin Gausman has a really good splitter. Watch out for it.
Yeah, that was the debut of that to me where you go, holy crap, what a pitch that thing is. Mm-hmm. That thing is devastating. We're going to be talking about that pitch. That pitch has a chance to join the Marco Estrada changeup in Blue Jays fan legend lore, where we go, and then there was the Gausman splitter. Like, he throws that pitch that way for an entire season, and he becomes, a guy that every Blue Jays fan goes, do you know about his splitter? And we go, it's devastating.
A million kids, like, dislocating fingers trying to get a split finger grip on a baseball.
Yeah. Really, really cool pitch. Really, really great pitch. Great job by him. And you're right. And Mesa came in. Eilish, I don't know if I feel any differently about the rotation from the beginning of the year. Like, I was always really confident that these top three guys were going to be good. I think that Gausman needed to be good right away just because I think it's important for new players to feel like they're a part of the team and that the fan base buys into them and that you get rid of some of the anxiety of a big contract, right? With any player. Mm-hmm. I think that the pressure to perform with a big contract is a real thing for anyone with a soul. For some players, they don't care. They just get that big contract and they go, ha, gotcha! And then they just do not care the rest of the way. And then they start yelling at fans in parking lots like Alex Rios. But there's other guys who do. And so those three guys have been great. I think the question marks still remain to be seen about how the other dudes are going to operate. And tonight I'm going down to the ballpark. I'm going to see Ross Stripling. I'm curious to see how they navigate this from a bullpen standpoint because we talked about it. I actually like the back end of the bullpen. Mesa came in and he's a reminder that that's another quality arm back there. But it's how are you going to get there without the Striplings? If you're using Stripling, where is your Stripling to piggyback on Stripling? You know, there's no other Stripling. We can't can't pull over any further. So I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. And
yeah, well, yeah. Trent Thornton's the we have Ross Stripling at home, and it's not, I don't want to eat at home.
Just let me have McDonald's, please.
Yeah, and Ailish, to your point, I think it's a good one, because even if you had confidence in those top three guys, JD, like, there is an added element of pressure now, I think, on the starting rotation when you look at what that lineup looked like. And Teoscar and Danny Jansen are both looking at least 2 weeks out of here. Nothing coming imminently in terms of help. And yeah, you just got shut out twice in three games. You're the number 27 offense with runners in scoring position, and your overall offense so far has been average because Vlad and Springer are really the only guys left healthy who are hitting. So Ailish, I think it's a good point that it's great that those three guys have come through, and there's still an element of pressure on a Stripling, on a Ryu, on a Kikuchi, because suddenly this doesn't look like the opening day team where you're like, oh yeah, of course they can hang 10 runs. Those two absences go a long way, especially when a couple guys are slumping who you'd pencil in as top six, top seven guys normally.
Blake, it's not a good feeling going down to the ballpark tonight, I got to tell you, where I was just like, I'm talking the game out from a betting standpoint with my brother last night. I'm going, how do we bet this game? Because we have to bet the home team, right? But it doesn't feel great given the lineup and given that they have Ross Stripling on the bump. And then he goes, well, maybe we just play the over. And I go, but then the Blue Jays had Tapia hitting, what, 50 yesterday. So Zimmer was in the, Big Z was in the lineup. So I don't know how I feel about that either. Okay, this is a little, so last season, Marcus Semien started off slow, if you recall. He really did. He had a really slow debut, and then the guy turns out to be number two in terms of most important players of this Blue Jays team, arguably, again, number one. Chapman, not really concerned about it. Think the glove, obviously, is the main thing about the guy's game, and over the course of a regular season, game over game over game, especially with this pitching staff, we're going to be all Matt Chapman fans. But do you guys have a little bit of a concern, given that he's had a really tough start to his Blue Jays tenure? He has a moment last night where the game ends on a brain fart by him. And then he's heading to a series where his old team is in town and he's going to be a like primary focus player from a narrative standpoint, right? People are going to go, didn't we get the third baseman from these guys during this series for the next three games? I don't know if that this is a thing. I'm asking. Maybe it gets swallowed up in the Raptors playoffs. Maybe it gets swallowed up by the fact that the Leafs play, they play twice this weekend? They play Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, back to back.
So, because I know they play the Islanders Sunday, I'm going to go to that game, but I'm not sure how big this will actually be, but I just mentioned the whole, hey, there's the pressure when you get a contract thing. Gossman goes out there, he delivers that way. Chapman had the one really sick home run, but they did lose that game. How do you just feel in terms of the mounting pressure potentially on Chapman as you look at a team that has lost a little bit of depth, and all of a sudden he is like pushed up the lineup a little bit and becomes a more important bat as well as the glove?
I had two thoughts on it. I was a little surprised that he needed some time six games into the season. I know that they're about to go on a pretty lengthy run of playing, but was it because he's playing his team on the weekend? He wanted to have him a little bit rested up. I don't know if that's a thing that Blue Jays or you know, coaching staff think of. But yeah, I think I mentioned it on Monday when I said, oh, okay, my little bit of concern level is that this is kind of what we heard about Matt Chapman, and he's been a little bit as advertised. Do you move him up to try to get him going? And I think you guys are kind of like, ah, maybe not yet. But now that kind of recircles.
No, you move him up because there's no bodies. Like, yeah.
Well, that's an easy answer. But back like on Monday, we didn't have as many injuries, so I do think there's something in there, especially because everyone's a bit fresh. I know, you know, it doesn't matter what the fan base thinks, but sometimes the confidence level and like how people are talking about a new guy, it's not like it's going to trickle in. But I do think that there's been some negativity about his play so far, and I think it's justified. So maybe there's a way you spark him, hopefully for this weekend.
Yeah, you'd hope the playing the X team helps him. You'd hope, you know, that crowd energy. And the other thing is, he's about to face, you know, the issue with Chapman so far has been the strikeouts, right? He's got 9 strikeouts and 24 plate appearances.
I thought it was 22 strikeouts and 24 plate appearances, honestly. Like, I felt like it's been every at-bat other than that home run.
No, he's the king of three true outcomes. He's got three walks and a homer, too. So more than half his plate appearances don't have a ball in play. But you're going up against a guy tonight who's a softer throwing righty who doesn't miss bats. You know, the pitches we've seen Chapman struggle with those strikeouts are high heat and heat outside, and you go back to what changed in his down 2020 and down 2021, it was that kind of stuff. It was the ability to get ahead of good velocity on the outside part of the plate or up in the zone. And Dalton Jeffries is not going to offer. Yeah, Dalton Jeffries generally sits like 92, 93 with his fastball. Has not struck out a lot of guys in his small major league sample. So, yeah, if you can't get going against a guy like that, then the concern level goes up, I guess. It's still early, like you said, and the Semien one's a good one to remember. But yeah, Dalton Jeffries, Paul Blackburn, Adam Aller.
Mm.
You gotta get something going here, I think.
So if you want a little bit more confidence in terms of Chapman turning it around and you want another Oakland A's parallel with Semien, yeah, Semien started a season slow last year, but you know who he absolutely raked against? The Oakland. Oakland Athletics. Boy, oh boy. OPS of 111, pretty good in 34 plate appearances. He had 10 hits in those 34 plate appearances and drew a few walks as well. So, yeah, hopefully Matt Chapman can channel a little bit of that and can maybe get a little bit of revenge against his team. Again, this is very, very early in the season. I'm not worried about Matt Chapman. I just did think that this is kind of unfortunate timing for him, where all of a sudden he goes from being a down lineup guy that is here primarily for defense and a little bit of cherry on top offense where he hits the odd bomb, draws the odd walk, and now all of a sudden he's up in the lineup and you go, well, he's got to hit sort of sixth, he's got to hit maybe fifth, he's playing his former team, and he has the moment last night where you go, oh, okay, well, that's a bad one. That's not the best look to be having. And you saw just the way he was at the base, right, where he was really upset with himself. He took an extra second laying there where I went, is he hurt? And then I realized, no, he's just really, really upset at his base running mistake. And it's about, yeah, that early time with the team. I mentioned how good he looked when he hit that home run in the dugout where he's smiling with all his teammates. But I think that probably wears on you when you're the new guy and you're not contributing and you're not playing the way that you want to play.
Yeah, and you had just worked a walk too, right? So if you were going to build some optimism and you were going to build some positivity, not that any of those Aroldis Chapman pitches were anywhere close to the strike zone. Like that was four pitches basically in the dirt. But still, you got on base, you loaded the bases up for the top of your order. You got to feel a little good about that. And then, yeah, it goes that way where, you know, that positive almost, you walk away with it as a negative because it put you in a position to end the game like that.
So weird Leafs day because Nyes decides to go back to school. It was something that we all sort of predicted. Yet when it happened, I thought, well, that's a bit of a bummer. If you're a Leafs fan, it is. It's a bummer. I don't know how else you can put it. If you're a Leafs fan, you don't have to apologize for feeling bummed out that Matthew Nyes is going back to school. It can be two things, right? It can be good for Matthew Nyes. It can be good for his development. It can be something that we don't necessarily need to weigh in on an opinion on whether or not he made the right decision because we're not him. But if you're a Leafs fan, your allegiance is not to Matthew Nyes' college career. It's to the Toronto Maple Leafs. So if you're bummed out, it's okay. I just saw a lot of fan shaming going on yesterday when I fired up the old Twitter machine for the few minutes I was on it yesterday between going from brewery to brewery. God, a lot of great breweries in this city. I got to tell you, Toronto,
JD had a day yesterday. He was the one with 45 beers, not me.
I did 45 beers yesterday. I was very – I like, too, when you go to breweries because you get to drink and you get to go, oh, I'll try this one. And it's like – oh, I'm not just drinking. I'm kind of classy having all these different types of expensive beers. Where you,
I will say getting a flight is a ripoff, though. Like, it's nice to try things, but a little flight is like, it's a scam, I think.
See, I love a flight because then if there's a good bottle shop, then you know what you want to go and get for.
But in terms of, like, money, I think it's a little bit of a scam. You can just say, can I try this, sir? And then they give you a little bit and you like it.
I
like to save $60, though.
Blake, that's such a girl move because I would never do that at a bar. Can I have a little bit of this and then a little bit of that, a little bit? I feel like if you're a guy, you get one of that. You know, like you get one of the, can I try this beer?
But if there's, I wasn't saying you're going to get four
but the whole point,
testers, like,
yeah, but that's
get
what
your
a flight
own
is, Ailish. And Ailish is that, like, you just said, hey, you don't need to pay for it. You can just go up and ask
just
them for
one.
A little sip.
Not four.
I like that Ailish calls them testers too. Like it's the in the wire. Like when they get the new pack, And like testers, yellow top. Every episode,
I haven't seen The Wire, but he's just like, sounds
it's
like me.
Just like, yeah. Well, when they switch to a new package, like a new brand, they give out free drugs to get people hooked.
Ailish is the person who goes to Bulk Barn, and they had to put up the like, you don't get to just snack here sign.
Putting my hand in the bin for a couple almonds.
No, because that's the thing. You are the type of person who goes, well, if I'm just having a little, it's not a thing.
That's disgusting. I would never.
I don't know if I feel like Kit Kat today. I need to eat a Kit Kat to see.
Wait, I've never tried a Kit Kat mini. Is it the same? Is it Kit Kat?
Sorry, you said M and M?
Yeah.
That's what these are?
Are they different?
So,
which M tastes better?
So it's too bad Matthew Nyes couldn't have got a tester here, because I think he would have liked it. And I had some kind of hot takes about at least the convincing him process, but I'm going to shelf those. He doesn't come, but the Leafs show that they don't really need him. They absolutely destroy the Washington Capitals. And it was sort of comical to me sitting there saying, there's just a huge gap between this team and the Caps. Caps are a playoff team. They're a good team. And the Leafs just went out and rolled them. And I'm not saying that's an every night thing where the Leafs would beat them by that margin in a playoff series. But we talked about the confidence of Raptors fans heading in, right? And this is the contrast for me, is that a Raptors fan looks at the Sixers series and has a history of success, and they say, I could see us beating the Sixers. Who cares if they have the best two players? We've beat them without Fred VanVleet in the regular season. Like, we're extrapolating regular season stuff and putting it on the Raptors, when it's just as, I would say, irrelevant when it comes to projecting forward sometimes, regular season success and postseason success with basketball versus, like, hockey with playoffs. And yet, it still feels the same way, where there's just an anxiety-riddled fan base. And I'm going, man, as long as they avoid Tampa, who even I watched Tampa last night throw that game on, they're playing the Ducks, and they barely squeak it out.
They barely squeak that one.
Barely squeak it out. Lucky break at the end of the game. And I'm thinking, Tampa's not quite Tampa this year. Boston lost to the Senators. They're not really Boston this year. The Leafs, you should be feeling confident. This should be feeling riding high. I think that we're going to be working into the summer this year. I know people hate when we make projections, because their anxiety, again, is so high, and they think that what we say matters when it comes to Austin Matthews shooting the puck. But I just don't know how you couldn't be feeling good about this team when they're kicking the crap out of teams like Washington in that fashion. Like, they say you measure good teams by how they beat bad teams. Well, what about how good teams beat good teams as
well? The bounce back from the last game the Toronto Maple Leafs played, and the grossness we felt watching that, into last night, where from puck drop, they were the most dominant team against a way better team. And this is the thing that the Leafs have shown all year, is they will play up to the best of competition. They held Ovechkin to one shot. Did you even notice him out there? Like, we came in with the narrative of Matthews, Ovechkin, like it's going to be a tilt with the big heavyweight goal scorers. And it was a snooze fest if you're an Ovechkin fan. And I'm sure a lot of people went down to the arena to see that matchup. And the Leafs, from start to finish, dominated. And that's what you want to see. Gives you the confidence level. It was a physical game. This was one of the first times we saw the big guys on the Leafs kind of showing up and throwing the body. We had the fight. We had the Tom Wilson moment. And I think that shows the Leafs have a little bit of extra grit, and they can play to that level in the playoffs, because it became kind of a playoff type atmosphere. You gotta try to stay out of the box. You gotta try to also lay the body. I was impressed with the way the Leafs rallied back after a disappointing game, and just put a big bow on last night.
Yeah, and I thought the physicality was really there, right? If you're looking for an example of a Leafs game where, you know, hey, they're playing more of a playoff side, like Morgan Rielly was laying people out. I thought that was a huge Morgan Rielly game. You see the value of Lyubushkin as a, you know, a physical guy further down your defense pairings. And yeah, you scored a lot of goals without any help from Austin Matthews. So even if you're like, well, the Ilyas aren't going to combine for three goals every game, it's like, okay, but Matthews gets one more often than not. So yeah, I've said this for a while now, that I care much more about games like this in Florida and Tampa than I do about the Montreals and Buffalo games, because these are the teams you're playing in a postseason. And if you're Washington, like, yeah, maybe you're kind of looking ahead a little bit, because no one's going to catch you for a playoff spot, but you could still catch Pittsburgh. in the standings. You could still catch Boston in the standings and you know, play the seeding game or
they
whatever.
Care. And they're playing the Leafs, Blake, which is always a care game for teams that are from outside.
Yeah, and I don't
Ovechkin always cared about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't I'm sure Ovechkin doesn't love all the chatter Matthews is getting and all the questions of, well, is this better than Ovi's best season? Like that's a team that should have wanted that game and should have showed up. And other than Tom Wilson, they didn't really. And yeah,
so predictable.
happy with how that one went down for the Leafs for sure. The increased physicality over the last couple weeks from their defensemen has been really nice to see.
Labushkin is in the playoffs. Like he's
playing. Hall's the guy out. It's got to be. Liljegren's been too good.
Little lily pad. Come on.
Has he though? I don't know. I think it's those two guys and that they'll they're the bubble
duke
players.
Duke it out, yeah.
And I think that Sheldon Keefe will probably lean Hall to start and then make the adjustment of putting Liljegren in for playoffs. That's just my feel on it now. Maybe that changes. I think that both guys get a crack. I'm not really overly impressed with Hall's play as of late. I think that's pretty clear. The other part of it is that he and Muzzin have just kind of continued not to work out. The one rough moment of the game, by the way, last night, Muzzin, where it just like kind of looks like he's in mud sometimes.
They tried to say that he got caught in a rut, but I don't think he got caught in a rut. I think he got caught just getting blown away.
I think he got caught in being in his closer to mid-30s now. Is what he got caught in. I think it's a good problem to have, is the way that I would put it. But Labushkin, to me, is definitely in. Just the physicality that he's bringing night in, night out. When they tried him up the lineup with Riley and had him playing in those heavy minutes, you started to see him get exposed. But that's what we talked about when they acquired him, which was, hey, you're going to like this guy. It's what the scouting report was. You're going to really like this guy, but if you put him in spots he's not meant to be in, you're going to start to see the flaws in his game. When he gets to be simplified, you see a really good player. That clapper was awesome yesterday, but outside of that, it's just like he's a thumper, and you just notice him physically every single game. And there's also usually, I would say once every two games, it's very close to Labushkin just laying someone out in a really horrific, like he's hunting for big hits, and I like that about him.
Yeah, and so the Riley pairing is tough because not only is that heavier minutes, it's also you run into, okay, well, Riley's a defenseman who's going to activate a lot, right? And he's going to take some risks and he's going to take some chances. And if there's one weakness in Labushkin's defensive game, it's that he's not the best skater on the rush, right? So you gotta, you know, I know that that pairing worked fairly well, and they played 11 minutes together last night with basically, you know, perfect metrics and stuff like that. But that would be the one concern is, hey, those Riley pinch situations, those Riley gamble situations, the one drawback with Labushkin is getting back the other way, and that's a team-wide problem anyway. So maybe it's just something you live with because it's baked into your DNA, and what partner are you putting him with that doesn't take some risks like that or create a very, very slow D pairing. So maybe I'm overthinking that.
Well, I think what we're looking at here, though, is, hey, you've got seven defensemen, which is an awesome problem. But, well, I mean, it may be eight because Sandin is at least making progress quietly. It's been a very quiet story, but he has been skating. He has been looking, I mean, like he's going to be close to being ready for the playoffs. You're going to have options, right? And you're going to be able to sustain an injury to the blue line. The reason why I think, though, that you're going to lean towards Hall to start is because of what you said, Blake, which is that the team has been more physical lately, and I think that they want to lean into that a little bit. If you have a blue line that has all those guys on it, Giordano now, Labushkin now, Muzzin now, he might look a little step slow, but he doesn't look as afraid to hit since he's been back. Like, I've noticed an increase in the physical play. Hall, Riley playing that way. That has a little bit more of an identity. I love that Kyle Clifford stuck up for his teammate yesterday, that he went out and scrapped. Poor guy, because you knew Tom Wilson Tom Wilson, he was never going to let Kyle Clifford beat that handsome face. He was never going to let him touch it. He was going to say, I always feel for the fighter on a team when the other team has someone way tougher. Like, if Ryan Reeves or Wilson, those are basically the two guys where you go, you don't have a hope. And Clifford stood in tall, but he got his ass whooped. Like, there's no question. Wilson's jawing. And I would just think it's so intimidating that you're there and just going, he ran our goalie. I'm the guy who has to do this. This is my job. But I'm going to need a really lucky punch to win this fight. And Wilson just yamming away, going just not the best, but I like that he stuck up for his teammates. I like that. Jack Campbell not being hurt. Miracle.
Oh,
no idea.
Truly a miracle. He got bulldozed. Like, there's no other way to put it.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a dirty play by Tom Wilson. Did you, Ailish?
No, I think that two things can be true. He took a very specific route where he went inside, which left him not a lot of room, and that can be seen as, okay, a little bit of trying to get the edge. He was one of the best forecheckers. Like, he's in there, speed, straight in, and I do think that there was an unfortunate angling that happened there, but
he got ridden in a little bit too.
He did get ridden in. Watch, and like, you really had to slow it down because it's hard to you know, analyze when he's going full speed, but he gets a little bit of back pressure. I think he could have, maybe the argument is he could have tried a little bit harder to avoid Jack Campbell, but no, I don't think it was a dirty play. I think that the route he took going inside made it a lot more difficult for him. I agree.
He's trying to 100%. Make a play. Jack's in a weird spot. It sucks because it's the player, Tom Wilson, that you go.
If it was someone else, you would have been like, doubt. Like, sorry, he took a bad route. Everything's fine. But the second it's Tom Wilson, you're like, well, he went and ran the goalie, get him out of this league, fire him, cut him, suspend him, whatever. But I really don't think it was intentional. I think there's a lot of factors that went into play on that one.
And Jack didn't seem to have any issue with it. And Jack Campbell's not a guy who's going to come out in
Dubas
the media.
Dubas did.
And
you see the Dubas cut?
Ooh. Yeah.
Did you see Keldon Sheldon Keefe was up at the bench like for every single whistle, intermission. He got down there when the lights were still off trying to talk to the refs. Like, it was spicy, spicy, spicy.
Yeah, Jack said after the game, I just reached for the puck and it's a hockey play. Met him at the All-Star game. Nice guy. Don't think any harm was done by it. Love a little contact here and there. So it was fine. Yeah, very
We're more forgiving to good-looking people. Like, that's just who we are as a society. Like, we give good-looking people a little bit more rope.
We've talked about that.
Well, and Jack Campbell, you know, probably fancies himself a part of that society.
Well, yeah, he definitely does. He's like, as a member of the Handsome Guys Society. If that's Backstrom, I think we're blaming Muzzin for riding him into the goalie, to be honest. Like, because it's Tom Wilson, we're going, well, no benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I hard pressed for me to think that a Leaf fan looking at that through rational eyes is saying that was a dirty play by Tom Wilson. If you want to, fine. But I think Kyle Dubas, even his reaction and Keith's reactions, those are two emotional guys that probably believe what I believe, which is that this team could win a Stanley Cup with Jack Campbell, but that they can't with Eric Schalgren. Let's take a break. Let's keep the winning coming. The winning streak runs with the A-List. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and A-List, Sports at 590 The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning shows,
person
up 590, The Fan.
Way to step on the harmony. Way to go.
No, I was letting it go.
Just kidding.
If you were wondering what this gem of a song we are currently listening to live on the radio, you got to go to Blake's The Fan Morning Show aux cord playlist on Spotify, and you can see it's JD's day today. Two songs in and quite the range, to say the least, of selections.
Okay, so my brother My brother came in from the East Coast this week, right? And whenever I think of the East Coast, I think of Stan Rogers, and I just do. And it's just so good. And that song, Barrett's Privateers, is, I would say, the greatest song of all time. It just is what it is. It's such a good song. If I could pick one, you gotta go do a karaoke song, that's 100% it. If you can get like a couple of guys up on the stage, a couple of people up on the stage, elite karaoke song. When you get to hit the God damn them all, huge pop, huge pop. Just saying. Don't steal it from me because it's kind of mine and you're just copying me, but whatever. A lot of people do that anyway, so do your thing. Blake, is that song like, you know, that's got to be
ingrained. He's an East Coast roots.
I know. It's Do you know that song?
East Coast Roots and Muted. Yeah. Yeah, of course I know that song. It's not I don't hold it in as high esteem as you do quite. Also,
maybe if
weirdly,
there's a little
like,
bit of screamo midway.
Buzz Killington. It's not sad enough for you.
Yeah. The other thing is Stan Rogers wasn't from the East Coast. So
I know. He's from Hamilton.
Strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Brunt just hanging out.
Yeah. Cultural appropriation is like, but two great Canadian authors who knew how to capture a Canadian story. Another great capture of Canadian stories is Ailish Forfar. Let's do the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Unfortunately, the first item features an American player, but nonetheless, we're on the Canadian airwaves, so it counts. Yesterday, I gave the story of the Venmo Ryan Hartman saga where him and Evander Kane had the little middle finger off, and he got a million donations of people very happy with his play. Yesterday, he tweets out, "Wow, overwhelmed by the amount of donations I have received to help pay my fine. You fans are amazing. I will be paying with it for my own money." Side note, it was $4,250. "You fans are amazing. I wanted to let everyone know that any money sent to me by 7 p.m. on Friday will be donated to Children's Minnesota." So we knew there was going to be a good spin to this. He's not going to just empty his Venmo account and pay his NHL player safety fine, but there's the result. He's going to be donating the funds to Children's Hospital. And you could also keep sending him money until 7 p.m. tonight. So if you like it, you think he's done something really special. He was already at $7,000 as of yesterday at 2 p.m., which I'm sure has grown. So good for you, Ryan Hartman. Good for you.
Yeah, good for him. That's a great way to do it. We kind of chirped the other day when this came up that, it's a little weird when people raise money for people who are much, much wealthier than them.
Good spin
it's
on
just
it,
like,
though.
It's huge. Yeah, it's huge. I was going to say FinDom, but I guess it's more like FinSimp. You're just like financially simping. Good move of him to spin it around and do it for something good.
Okay, speaking of money, the Bieber Leafs jerseys, which debut a couple weeks ago for Next Gen Night, you know, the reversible Justin Bieber design Maple Leaf jerseys, have now become the highest selling jerseys in the last since they came out. The special youth inspired jerseys obviously hit really well. People were excited about them. They're the only reversible jerseys that have ever come out, but they have been selling incredibly fast. So I don't know if you got your hands on them or if you wanted to, but it might be more difficult now because they're the cool new thing and Coachella's coming up. So maybe that'd be the Coachella outfit of choice.
Well, speaking of Coachella, Alex Wong, who does the whole this is a great 2030 yes. Coachella bit. I was on the Raptor show with William Liu on Tuesday.
Is he going?
And no, but they are, that was a pivot to Alex Wong, not to Coachella. But they're betting on all the NBA games against each other, and the prize on the line is buying the other one of the Drew House Leafs jerseys.
Oh, that's cool.
Also,
they're gonna add to the fund here.
Yeah, exactly. And if there was a Coachella pivot here, it would be plugging that Pop is playing Coachella this weekend.
Not a big deal.
Wynn Butler can go away. Don't put Arcade Fire at the same time.
Oh, okay. Those two quick little ones. Remember when Tom Brady was retiring and unretiring? Snip, snap, snip, snap for my Office fans. You know that one. His last touchdown ball, remember, was sold for $518,000 the night before he unretired. That guy we talked about, wow, what a bad bounce to go all in and buy that touchdown ball. Well, it has actually been voided now because of the situation with it not being his last game ball. Interesting. I thought that maybe it would be worth even more because it was, you know, the snip snap retirement ball. But nonetheless, they voided it, and a very fortunate situation for that guy that spent $500,000 on the ball. He will have to wait for the actual retirement ball.
It loses all its value unless Tom Brady agrees to sign psych on it. Then it would be worth a lot more. Psych!
I'm surprised that he's upset that they voided it, considering there are people out there like Ailish who thought it was worth more. And she's like, no, it's worth more because he went snip snap. And they go, okay, sure. Yeah, that'll be $600,000, man. Thank you for your money. See you later.
It could be more unique and rare. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Like Ailish is like, it's more unique and rare. It's just like a normal touchdown pass that he threw. It's just he's thrown hundreds of them, but this is one of the hundreds.
Do you want the football that Tom Brady threw for the 11,317th attempt of his 12,000 career attempts?
Or the last one. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's figure out what's going on with some of the Jays' injuries, what we've got timelines on, what we don't have timelines on, and whether or not the organization has changed its stance on the use of prospects moving forward and elevating them to the Blue Jays. Ben Nicholson-Smith will know. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Blake and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.